Hello, thanks for downloading, thanks for listening. This is a Football Fans podcast from the people behind CelticUnderground.net. Regular followers of me on social media will know that I have been desperately looking for a member of the SNP to come on and discuss defence behaviour at Football Act. Obviously, we've had James Kelly on. I've given my own opinion, and we've had the guys from Fans Against Criminalisation on with Jeanette and Paul and others. So, finally, after some promises that were never delivered upon and numerous requests, Mr. John Mason, MSP, who is a vociferous supporter of the Act online, agreed to come on. I decided to continue in the style that we always do stuff in the podcast. It was a conversational thing. Wasn't going to sit down with 101 questions to do it. And I'll just let you be the judge of his position and how it went. It was an honest mistake. I finally have my SNP guest that I've been bemoaning on Twitter about, and now joined by one of the people who's quite vociferous on Twitter and in defending the position of the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act. I'm joined by John Mason, MSP, out in the east end of Glasgow. So before we start any podcast, we have to get your footballing credentials, because I'm sure many people have hurled the abuse at you that you're not even a football fan. Yes. So it's to ask, what was your first football game and who was your first hero?
Well, I could not actually tell you. I started going to watch Clyde in my teens because I lived in Rutherglen and Shawfield was the nearest senior ground, apart from Glencairn and Campus Lang Rangers. And so I used to walk down to Shawfield every other Saturday. And at that time, early 70s, it was people like Don Sullivan, Steve Archibald, also Brian Ahern, people like that who were my heroes. Brian Ahern still lives in the east end of Glasgow. And so I've been on and off. I don't go to every single game, but I'm a season ticket holder at Clyde, and we're struggling at the moment, but I'm sure we'll get there one of these days.
Well, I'll ask, very quickly ask you about Clyde, because one of the things that I always remember reading up years ago, and you'll know better than me, Clyde qualified for the Fairs Cup in 67 and then didn't get to play in it because it was a cities based cup at the time, and two thirds of Shawfield was in Glasgow and a third was in Rutherglen. Is that right?
Yes, well, the Fair Cities Cup, that's right, because they would only allow one team from each city, which, well, I suppose football's always got strange rules, but that did seem a bit unfair to Clyde, so we didn't get into Europe that season. We have a strong history. We've won the Scottish Cup three times, and of course, one of our memorable recent events was beating Celtic at Broadwood, which I happened to watch in Barcelona because I was away that week and found a Scottish pub that was showing it. So they couldn't believe they'd have a real Clyde supporter in the pub in Barcelona.
What's your thoughts on? When I was younger, I thought the move to Broadwood was a good idea because it's a brand new town that doesn't have a team. Yeah. Come on, old. As I've got older, I've realised, and knowing that end of Glasgow a bit better, it would have made more sense to go to East Kilbride than Cumbernauld.
Yes, I mean, probably more of the population went to East Kilbride. I mean, I think it's a challenge these days. I think Clyde still has the potential of a support, and I think the last time I saw the figures, it was about a third of the season ticket holders are Cumbernauld people, so there is an element where they have got the relationship with Cumbernauld. I mean, Clyde got into debt, owed the council huge amounts of money, so it was a very strained relationship and they both wanted to break it. I'm glad to say, I mean, I think now there are new personalities on both sides. Mm-hmm. We've got the new chairman, Norrie Innes, whose father was another Clyde player before my time, and there seems to be a more positive relationship. So I personally would be positive about staying at Broadwood. It may not be the perfect location, but we're not going to get that good a stadium anywhere else. And they looked at moving back to, say, Shettleston or Sharing or with Glencairn or somebody like that. But
there was a lot of talk about going to East Kilbride about a year, 18 months ago, wasn't
it? Oh, and well further back before we went to Cumbernauld.
In the recent past, it was almost it seemed to be a done deal that it was happening.
Well, it kind of got that way, but
was that just a threat?
Well, we had one or two directors, let's say, who were a little bit ready to jump the gun and were a bit more optimistic than I think was justified. The Lowland League, I think, has complicated things, because at East Kilbride it would have suited if they'd had a junior club and a senior club together, and then never the two would meet, kind of thing. But of course now with the Lowland League and the pyramid system, East Kilbride, potentially Cumbernauld Colts, these clubs can come up, and Clyde can go down, obviously. So it makes it less attractive for any of these clubs, and even for a junior club like Shettleston, it's not very attractive having Clyde, you know, we'd bring up a few supporters, but they'd lose playing on Saturdays and things. So I mean, it's...
We'd have to build floodlights, because I think that's one of the big gripes of the lower league clubs about junior clubs getting in the Scottish Cup.
That they don't have floodlights. I mean, there's things like that, the practicalities, which could be worked out, but the reality is, we're at Broadwood, lots of people would love to be at Broadwood. I'm perfectly happy staying at Broadwood.
Okay, well, moving on from there and retaining football, the biggest reason for wanting to come is the offensive behaviour at football and threatening communications bill, and the possible repeal that's going through Parliament just now, and the attitude of many football fans, certainly people who've been on our podcast, towards the bill. So do you want to give us a bit of background? Because not everybody listening to this is a passionate interest in the offensive behaviour at football, so do you want to give us a bit of a history and the thought process behind it?
Yes, I mean, and I accept that if you ask 10 people for their histories of it, you'll get 10 different accounts. So, I mean, I'll give you my account. And, I mean, I think the bigger picture is we have a problem, particularly with sectarianism, not just with sectarianism, but when I say sectarianism, I'm including anti-Irish racism and anti-Catholicism in that. But we do have had that problem. We've had that problem for quite a considerable amount of time. And within the Scottish Parliament, which was only reconvened in 1999, we've had one or two people that have really taken a lead and said, we have got to do something about this. One was a Lib Dem, whose name temporarily escapes me, and then Jack McConnell, who was a Labour leader at one point, talked about, you know, we have to deal with this, because I think for many years it wasn't talked about. So, and I think the SNP came under a bit of pressure over a number of incidents. I don't think it was just one incident, but okay, there were particular incidents that happened. And the SNP was under pressure to do something about this thing. Mainly sectarianism, but it was brought forward as offensive behaviour at football, and the word sectarianism does not appear in the bill, which is a criticism or a whatever you want to call it. So I think that I see that as the background to it. It was a well-meaning attempt to tackle it. I would be happy to accept it was rushed. I mean, it slowed down a bit in the process, but for something that had been going on for effectively 400 years, to try and, you know, push it through probably within a year was just, you know, ridiculously fast. And it would have benefited from, and hopefully there might have been more buy-in if it would taken a longer process. So wherever we go going forward, I think we just need to make sure we take time and listen to everybody. And not everyone will be happy either about this repeal or any replacement to it. But I still believe we need to do something. We cannot allow things to continue as they have been and as I feel they still are.
So what is in this Act that wasn't covered by legislation before the Act?
Well, the committee report, which I was just reading at the weekend, which just came out on Friday,
which is very, very critical of the Act.
Well, it presents, to be fair, it presents both sides on some of these things. So they had witnesses at the committee who said, no, it didn't make any difference to what was there before. And they had witnesses who said, yes, it did. It was more specific. Breach of the peace is so wide, so vague. I mean, some people have said that the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act is a bit vague, and I'll accept that. But it's not half as vague as breach of the peace. And the courts generally these days, I think there's been a trend, I think it's a European trend, that they want specific legislation. The courts don't like this kind of very wide, very vague thing. And it does happen elsewhere. Dangerous driving is given as an example, where there isn't a very clear definition. So sometimes legislation does need to be wider. But I mean, whether or not it improves the situation in the previous legislation, it did make a statement that sectarianism, etc., was not acceptable, and some of the behaviour around football was not acceptable. And I think that was good. whether, so it wasn't just that it changed the actual rules a lot, but it was also that it sent out a signal, and I think both of these were reasons for having it.
Yeah, so you want to send out a signal that certain behaviours not acceptable. I think we're a number of people, my position is the vagueness of it has led to lots of issues. I could have done tons of research and I could have come with lots of notes this meeting, but I decided not to. I decided to come along to try and have the gut feel that I've had from day one about this act, and I know quite a bit about it, but I decided to try and speak from the way lots of the people listening to this will be, which is, I'm just aware that there's a piece of legislation which has in the title football. So,
and is it the word offensive that you feel is the kind of loose word? Is that the main word?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's patently, just anecdotally looking at some of the court cases that have come through, that's what's resulted in some people being done and some people not being done for the same thing. It's the vagueness of what's offensive. It's the fact that offensive, from my perspective, is such a subjective term. You know, I personally, as someone who grew up as a Catholic in the west of Scotland, find orange walks more than offensive.
Yes.
I mean, but should that then mean I have the right, because I find that, you know, I grew up in a time, fortunately, that I've not experienced this of late, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I grew up in a time where common practice was to drive your orange walk round to outside a Catholic church, stop for a period of time when Mass was going on and play extra loud and move on. I have been in my front garden, because this is the other point I would always make people, Scotland didn't really have a sectarian problem. Scotland had an anti-Catholic problem, principally. I can't think of many instances where people were prejudiced against for being Church of Scotland.
That's our Protestant or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So my point would be, I find the orange walk offensive. Should that then mean that I should have the right to enforce legislation that has people locked up in prison for doing something that I don't like?
Well, in the first place, when a term like offensive is used, or hatred, or any of these kind of words, it's not just what anyone feels, it is what the courts feel or consider a reasonable person would think. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I could be offended by some ridiculous thing, but that doesn't mean it's in any way binding in law. But it has to be what the courts, and the courts, to be fair to them, are used to interpreting some of these words. And if you allow case law to build up over time, these words, so like a reasonable person is a phrase, a term that the courts use quite a lot. So I don't think there's a problem with that. And as I referred to earlier, dangerous driving, you can say that's pretty subjective. But again, they start to pin it down over the years as to what is and what isn't. But yes, absolutely. In lots of areas of law, you will have two people do the same things, and because the police and the witnesses and the courts deal with it differently, you will get a different result. So the legal system, I mean, that's why I'm not a lawyer, I'm an accountant, because numbers, I like numbers, they're definite. As soon as you deal with words in the law, there's a vagueness about it, and the lawyers may say that's not the case, but it is the case, and they have to go on and interpret it.
But isn't that one of the intrinsic issues with the Act? Police have been sent on training courses to let them know what they're to be offended by.
Well, I'm sure police are sent on training courses about loads of things. I mean,
yeah, but by the way, just to let you know, you're going to find this offensive from this day onwards.
Well,
they're
being told what a reasonable person might find offensive, which might be different from what that individual police officer would find offensive.
Yeah, so how many reasonable people have reported a case under the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act?
Well, I certainly haven't reported a case, but I have seen offensive behaviour.
The police have reported all the cases?
Well, yes.
Right. So only the police are reporting cases under the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act?
Well, I mean, one
thing... I actually wrote to the police, because I think the act's a nonsense, and said, I was at a football game, and I found chance from the... And I deliberately picked a non-Rangers game. I found chance of the opposing fans offensive. And the police wrote back to me and said, yes, but no officer reported it, so it didn't happen, more or less.
Right. Okay. Right, and I'm happy to accept that's a problem. And I certainly think there could have been a lot more charges, like several times more charges under this Act, because I've seen it at Clyde games, not sectarian stuff at all, but, I was at Clyde, I think it was one of the Angus teams, and our fans, you know, are singing things about what the other fans do to sheep. Mm-hmm. And
but should somebody be locked up for that?
Well, the problem was it was right next to the family set where the kids from Angus fight.
Surely there's a massive difference in something that society deems as inappropriate and locking people up for something.
Well, I mean, then you're on to what you actually do if somebody's found guilty, and I would happy to agree that with lots of things, prison is not the answer.
Even giving someone a criminal record for something which is... let's move away from football. Comedians will tell comedians who are on the edge will sometimes cross that line between something that's funny and right on the edge and something that's just... unpleasant.
And also it changes over time, because I think, was it Benny Hill recently that there was discussion about some of his jokes, which at the time many of us probably didn't find funny, and now we'd be over that edge.
You know, Frankie Boyle made some joke about someone with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. I find that offensive.
Yes.
I find it pretty repulsive. Should Frankie Boyle get a criminal record for doing it?
Well, there's then got to be a scale of things as to, and it's the same with driving as well, there's a scale. You know, do you get a criminal record for just something silly you do, or do you just get a fine, or, you know, there's a whole range of things. And that should be the case, whether we're dealing with this particular Act or some future hatred legislation or whatever. Yes, some people will go all the way through the courts, but the courts or somebody has to decide how serious it is in the scheme of things. But I mean, I've seen... I saw fans really at least verbally abusing and actually physically abusing stewards at Stenhouse Muir, and the Stenhouse Muir had to call police for the first time in I don't know how many years, but I'm not aware of anyone being charged through that.
Just
ejected.
But that
they could have been charged.
Correct. And they could and should have been charged before the offensive behaviour put behind.
Under breach of the peace or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, a few said they were assaulting stewards.
But clearly that wasn't happening under breach of the peace, and I'm happy to accept that it's not happening a lot under this Act as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea that thousands of people have been criminalised is just nonsense. Maybe thousands of people should have been criminalised, and maybe thousands of people have broken the law, but very few have been charged.
Instead of inventing a new sausage machine, shouldn't you just have looked at the meat that went in the sausage machine in the first place? So instead of having a new offensive, a new Act, shouldn't you just have said, given guidelines to the police and said, we would like you to be more strict on the powers that you've got to deal with matters? Because I know what the police's attitude is. I've been at Hampden, and obviously I'm looking at it from a Celtic fan's perspective. I'm sure fans of other clubs would throw something back and heard, no, you know, there's 25,000 Rangers fans, at least half of them saying about being up to the knees in Fenian blood. Now, I understand why the police would turn around and say, we're not wading into that.
Exactly, to get 12,000 people.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
No.
So what's the point of the Act?
Well,
because that was illegal before the Act.
Yes.
Because you're saying about a religious group and being up to the knees in their blood.
Yes.
It was illegal before, it was illegal after. The police are not going to act before, and they're not going to act after.
So
what's the point?
Well, therefore, I mean, you're totally right that there is a huge problem when you have big crowds, and I think one of the results of the Act is that the fans of smaller clubs have been more ready to be charged, because it's easier for the police to deal with fans in smaller clubs than Rangers and Celtic. So I would argue the Rangers and Celtic fans have been treated exceptionally leniently through this process.
I would argue vehemently against that.
Fair enough, okay.
Because we'll get on to talking about policing methods and the dangers of that.
I'm happy to accept that either the courts or the police or somebody, the Lord Advocate, could have said to the police and the whole system, you know, you've got to tighten up on this, you've got to breach the peace, start using it a bit more. Interfering with the police, as you know, is a tricky issue for politicians. So And I think, I suppose, people understand and act better than, you know, just changing or changing how you apply the present law. So I think I take your point that you could have tightened up what was there already, but I think the feeling was, you know, let's have a new act and really, you know, make a point and try and take things forward. But I'm happy to accept if they have moved forward, they've not moved forward very much.
One of the other aspects in terms of if we talk about big crowds singing that I have found, so my first Celtic game was always 1974, so I've been going for a wee while. Fergus McCann brought in Boys Against Bigotry and had some reaction to it, because there was a feeling among some people that he was trying to do away with the Catholic history of the club, mm-hmm. when what he was wanting to do was tackle some of the songs that he didn't think he wanted to hear. And I would suggest that someone who attends Celtic games home and away, the last few years it's been mainly home, the songs had virtually disappeared. And I would say since this act, I hear them more now than I did before the act.
As a reaction kind of thing.
As a reaction.
Yes,
because if you turn around to young people and say, we don't want you to do something that the young people don't, I'm picking young people because they tend to be more rebellious, can be bothered about it when you get to early as you can't be asked. They tend to be more rebellious and tend to stick two fingers up to be
good. Yes.
And I have heard more, they disappeared from Celtic Park completely, apart from the Rangers games. And even now, if there's some at all, it's one small section. And they were disappearing from Rangers games. And I would say I hear them more now as a consequence of this act.
Yes.
So it's failed. If I as somebody who goes every week hear more of those songs now than I did before the act.
The question is that a short term thing? Is it just a reaction?
Well, how long has the act been in place?
26 years.
6 years.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. I mean, anything you deal with, that's a risk that you get some kind of reaction. And, you know, we've stopped drink driving to some extent, smoking in public places. There's always...
Yeah, look how quickly that happened.
Yes.
Smoking in public places is gone.
Yes.
Drink driving, it's just the residual core amount. Yes. Pretty much gone.
Yes. But you deal with something, I mean, and I think legislation... whether or not it's the right thing to do here, legislation is one of the ways we deal with society's problems, like minimum price for alcohol, say. But yeah, you take a risk when you pass legislation that it has to have effect if it's going to be. And we'd never say that legislation was the only thing. I think we need education, we need culture change, we need a whole load of things. But the culture change, the education, the breach of the peace was not making much progress, I do not think.
And the new act isn't either.
Well, some people have been charged. I think it's made some of them presumably wouldn't have been charged otherwise, but who knows. I think it would...
I would argue that's because of a proactive position from the police of greater video surveillance of supporters as a consequence of that act.
Well, I think video surveillance would have happened anyway. I mean, both sides are doing it, because I see it both. I see the fans' video surveillance.
I see the fans doing it in retaliation.
Well, I don't know who's retaliating to who. We can argue over that problem. But both sides are doing it. Both sides will continue to do it, whether or not we have this act here. I mean, I was looking at Twitter the other night, and a Celtic fan saying, we've got an awful relationship with the police, but that was not because of the act. That was beforehand, and then they gave other reasons why they've got an awful relationship with the police. But I mean, some people just hate the police no matter what. If the police say white, they'll say black. So I don't think it's fair to blame the act. It may be a factor, but it's certainly the poor relationship between some fans and the police. And I saw it at a Clyde game again recently. Police walks across the terracing, fans stand 6 inches from them with a camera. You know, that is, I just find that unacceptable. But it's allowed.
But in terms of one of the points I would make about the singing has got worse since the act and the way that you interact between authority and supporters. For me, one of the best examples was we need to control football supporters in the late 70s and early 80s. So we put up fences and then things got worse and worse. and the fences were not Hillsborough's, the cause of Hillsborough. Bad stadium design and bad policing was the cause of Hillsborough, but the fences compounded the problem.
Yes.
So they took the fences down, and miraculously, when they treated people like human beings, people behaved like human beings
some of the time.
And supporters came on the park after they took the fences down.
Well, the Rangers Hibs Cup final quite a lot.
And that was bad policing. You could see, anybody with half a brain could see that coming.
Well, good for you. Obviously, the police didn't, or somebody else didn't.
Well, I don't know. The police didn't. Two injury time, two last minute goals for a team who haven't won the Scottish Cup for over 100 years.
Great to cause reaction.
What the fans, and the fans had all gathered to run on the pitch, and the police didn't notice it.
No, the specific point of offences, yes, I'm happy to agree with you. I think the Scottish policing has been better than a lot of other countries who have used much more stringent methods. And, you know, from that point of view, did I see recently that Scotland's the 12th or 15th best country in Europe as far as fans' behaviour and things is concerned. But I mean, I still think you've got to try different things. We cannot leave things as they are. We cannot have a sizeable chunk of society or a sizeable chunk of football fans singing or chanting hatred at some other group. I mean, if it was black people shouting at white people, or white people shouting at black people,
that
would not be acceptable. But it wasn't working.
And it's not working now.
Well, fine, it's not working now, so we've got to do something better.
Well, no, you just get the police to enforce the law that's there.
But why wasn't that happening before? I mean, the committee...
Well, that's the police's fault. That.
So, well, not necessarily. It may be the courts. It may be... there's, as we said already, this idea of very vague legislation like breach of the peace.
Well, and we've already agreed that offensive is vague. It's a subjective term.
Yes. Which doesn't make it bad law. It makes it tricky.
Yeah, because you've had people... You've had people arrested, or certainly removed from football grounds for having a Free Palestine t-shirt. Who finds that offensive?
Well, I'm sure some people find that offensive, but then it's a question for the courts.
Yeah, but that's,
what
isn't that a very
point? What's a reasonable person?
Isn't that, yes, I know, but then you can't, then you have a situation where I don't like brown shirts and brown ties. Officer, arrest that man.
I have to be wearing, yes. So, and we've kind of touched on that before. I mean, I, as I've been thinking about it recently, and of course we've now got this review going on about hate crime generally. Mm-hmm. Lord Bracadale, I think it is, who's doing that. And, you know, at some point he's going to report. And I think, for me, maybe that would have been a better word. And the word, I think hatred is used in the Act, but I think we need to go down the route of trying to deal with hatred. And there's a balance with free speech, and that's not an easy one to get. But I think somewhere, I mean, if somebody is wearing a Free Palestine shirt, because that was the clean shirt they had that morning, that's fine. If that person hates the Jews, that is a problem.
Yeah, but there's nothing that says I hate Jews on Free Palestine.
No, so we're then on to not just what is the outward appearance. And that's one reason why it didn't mention specific songs in the Act, because that was discussed at the time. I was there and it was discussed. But the feeling was it depended so much on the context. And that applies to be it a song, be it a t-shirt or a whole host of other things. But that does make it, I mean, I'm agreeing with you on that point, it does make it a bit subjective.
And then isn't part of the problem with subjective on something which, in the moment, what you're effectively saying is something in the moment can be illegal, which in another moment isn't? Is that a fair...
Well, that often is the case.
Given the context of it.
I mean,
the problem you've then got is you're chucking into the mix of football's a passionate sport where yes. people's emotions rise and fall during the course of the game due to the performance of people on the park and the referee
yes.
and whatever.
Yes.
So somebody in that moment could then have a gesture or make a statement which there's no motivation behind it 2 seconds later. You're saying, rather than saying to that person, come on, calm down, that the police officer should huck them away and risk them getting a criminal record.
Well, as you said, I mean, the police have not generally been pulling people out of crowds, especially Rangers and Celtic games, because of the reaction they would get. So,
I mean, there was a guy who went to the court who, outside the ground, with nobody else, Celtic, I think, were performing poorly, maybe even been losing at St Johnson. And it was a Celtic fan. Outside the stadium, walking home, left the game early, and was shouting, I think he said, he shouted something about them being useless Fenian bastards, excuse the language, mm-hmm. and he was arrested. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, that's just, in terms of the context of it, there's nobody around to be offended, apart from police officers who've been trained to be offended.
Well, and in the context, it was easier to get at him, whereas 10,000 fans who were behaving worse get let off. So, I mean, from that point of view, yes, that's not fair. But, I mean, I would say I'm more worried about the 10,000 fans that are being hateful.
Yeah,
but it's one thing to react to a goal or a penalty or a foul or something like that. It's another to kind of chant on and on and on, as I've seen, either about the whole other side or, I mean, again, I use Clyde examples because I go to games. I mean, it was John Brown was the opposing manager at a friendly game, and he got subjected to abuse on and on and on and on. And that wasn't just a reaction to a goal, that was just hatred. And correctly, the Clyde fans were rejected. They were actually suspended by the club, although I think they were allowed back in eventually.
Yeah. So, people whose behaviour is crossing the bounds of what's socially acceptable, getting ejected from the ground. Fine. Mm-hmm. Ground regulations exist to allow a club to do that, to allow the stewards to do that, and allow the police to do that. But to then give someone a criminal record for something which might not be socially acceptable, but really something that deserves to be criminalised,
well,
impact on their... I mean, the some people having raids at 5-6 in the morning.
Well, the numbers are very, very few that have been charged, and very, very few that have had raids at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I think some of that has been definitely blown out of proportion. But I mean, ultimately, there has to be a kind of legal sanction. Not everybody who drives badly, you know, gets charged and imprisoned and all the rest of it. Most of them get warned. That is also what happens at football. But I mean, looking at it the other way, are we saying that absolutely any behaviour at football is allowed because it's a football? If people do, I mean, I accept that I shout at things which I would not normally shout about at football. It is a chance to let off steam, but surely there has to come a time when we draw the line.
Correct, and that already existed in the law.
But it wasn't working.
And it already existed, yes. But that's not the law. That's what you've done is said the existing law is not great. It's too vague, and what we're going to do is introduce another law which is even vaguer.
No, it's less vague. I mean, I think most people would accept that breach of the peace is vaguer than, and the committee says that, than the act that was put in place. But as I've said already, I'm happy to accept that there's a certain amount of vagueness about the offensive
behaviour. So, what's the point in replacing a vague act with a vague act?
Well, if it's less vague, that might be a step in the right direction. I mean, my answer then would be, well, we need a better legislation. We need to improve it, amend it, or replace it.
On football.
Because the behaviour is worse.
Because it knows now.
Yes, it is.
Everything that you've just said, everything all through this, you've referred to society. I wish I was counting. I would say you've said society probably about 10 times. This is not a football problem, sectarianism.
No, it's not.
So why pick on football?
Because when you ask the public, and it was done.
Don't refer to the survey that came out.
Well, yes, I will refer to the survey.
It's the worst survey. My 7-year-old would do a better survey.
Right,
than that.
Well, good for you. But the survey that was done was 88% of the public said that the thing they most associated with sectarianism was football, and then marches was down about 20%. Now, I'm happy to accept that we need to deal with marches as well, and I would hope Lord Bracadale's review will include that, but the public did or does associate sectarianism with football. I don't find that surprising.
719 charges for religious-related abuse charges in Scotland in 2016-17. 49 in the football. It's not happening.
Well, no, that's the charges. But I mean, I've already said there are thousands and thousands of people at football games who should be charged, who are breaking the law and are not. So the problem isn't. Well, one problem is that the law is not being enforced as it stands.
Sectarianism and relational and sectarian hatred exist anyway. You don't need the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act to do that. I want protected against religious hatred, whether I'm at a football match, yes, a rugby match, a tennis match, or walking down the street.
Yes, but there's a lot more hatred of football than there is at rugby or tennis or ice hockey or any of these things. Therefore, we need a wider view. I mean,
but the government's own statistics don't back that up. 719 people charged with a religious hatred in society, 46 of them, because my right, my, I've not got my glasses on, I can't read properly, 46 of them at the football. So it happens more.
There's a difference between what happens and what people are being charged with. Worse may be happening at football, but hardly anyone's charged, than in the street. I mean, I do not see people in the street throwing plastic eyeballs at disabled people. We do see it at football. Behaviour at football is worse than in general society. All clubs almost have a core who behave really badly.
But those people are bad people.
But they behave worse at football. Because they're in a big crowd.
They behave in a big crowd worse.
Mm-hmm. But they don't behave in a big crowd at all things.
But it's not football's fault.
Well,
this is a society football problem.
No, it's both.
No, it's not football's fault.
It's not entirely football's fault.
What does football do that creates that problem? Apart from being a place where large crowds gather.
Yes, it hosts and appears to be sympathetic to people being hateful.
How's football sympathetic to people being hateful?
Because all the clubs have a core, and they're the ones that create the atmosphere.
It's not the club's fault.
Well, it's partly the club's fault, and that's why in European football, there's strict liability. We do not have that in Scotland.
Don't get me started on strict liability. It's even more strict than the offensive behaviour of football.
Fair enough, but it's another issue. But I mean, the clubs, Rangers and Celtic, benefit to some extent from sectarianism.
How?
Because they have a core in each club.
How?
Who are very committed, create atmosphere, buy the strips, all of these kind of things. And neither Rangers nor Celtic want to antagonise these people.
Yes, Celtic do it all the time and get criticism for it.
Well, they swing around, and Peter Law's had problems as well.
Celtic have an announcement before every single game.
That's very good. But financially, all the clubs, including Clyde, benefit from some of these hardcore supporters who do spend the money, do create the atmosphere.
And are they flown in from Mars?
No.
So they exist in society?
Yes.
So they're society's problem?
But they behave worse than football.
That's where they exhibit their bad behaviour,
yes.
Is football?
Yes. Therefore it's a joint...
It's not football's fault.
No, but it's a joint fault. It's a joint.
Poorly educated people.
That's part of it.
It's part of the problem.
Yes.
That they think that's acceptable. There's a whole raft of reasons.
Mm.
None of it's generated by football.
It may not be generated by football, but if football's treating it too sympathetically, then we need to do something.
But how's football treating it sympathetically?
Because it's happening in football.
But that's not football's fault.
Well, football's hosting it. If you host a party and people get drunk and beat each other up, it may not be your fault they beat each other up, but you have some responsibility for producing the...
And if the first thing I do as soon as I find them is chuck them out of the house...
Well, that would be good, but we haven't seen the clubs doing that.
Yes, they do. Right?
Temporarily, they do.
Yes, but okay then. You just told me that the police won't do it.
Well, the police can't do it because there's a few hundred police and there's thousands of...
Well, how are the clubs supposed to do it?
Well, I mean, a lot of people now have seats, and I noticed that people are not going to be allowed to use their season ticket for other fans.
So as soon as Celtic what you've just said, if we just use Celtic, because that's the only club I know the exact circumstances. So as soon as Celtic identify that somebody has broken the law, they're banned.
Well, I think I'd want to couch it around a little bit more than that, than quite that black and white. But
and they get a lifetime ban.
Well, I think it has to be quite serious.
So why is it football's fault?
I'm not saying it is... I'm certainly not saying it's entirely football's fault. I accept that we've got a societal issue, which, as we said,
so
we're
getting
on for 4 years.
I used to play cricket.
Yes.
I heard people being very racist at the cricket. Was that cricket's fault?
I don't know anything about how the cricket were trying
wasn't
to deal with it.
Fault.
It wasn't their fault. The racism wasn't their fault, but they may have been sympathetic. They may have been encouraging it. They may not have been clamping down on it as much as they should have been.
What way is football sympathetic to sectarianism?
Well, if it's exhibited any of these things, and I would widen out to hatred generally,
mm-hmm.
and the clubs just say, well, that's part of football, it's working class culture, that's what we do.
But they don't.
Well, what's happened to the people throwing plastic eyeballs? I don't know.
Falkirk officially just came and saying they're looking into who it was, and if they find out who it is, they'll be banned for life.
And I'm fairly not disappointed at Falkirk's reaction.
What did the police do?
Yes, a good question.
You see, all of this, you're a politician, so you can say this. All of this, to me, comes back to what the police do.
Right, well, the police are part of this as well. I mean,
football pays an inordinate amount of money, and is because they have to pay an additional charge to police forces to come and police the game. I've got a policeman stands next to me. I'm in the north stand up at a Celtic Park, and within 5 seconds of me, there's a police officer. Do you know what? See if I can hit the opponent, the opposite. If I could ever hit the Brecon fans on Saturday with a... See, instead of being arrested, I should be in the next Scotland Commonwealth Games team. Why there needs to be a policeman next to me in football, I do not know. Because I can't do anything from where I'm sitting. But what... These are not football's issues. There's a point. I don't understand why you would pinpoint football. You know, race crimes in Scotland in 2016-17, 3,349. Hate crimes on sexual orientation in Scotland, 1,075. Religious charges have already gone over, 719. Disability aggravated crime, 188. Transgender crime offences, 40. Offensive behaviour in football act, 46.
Well, that doesn't prove to me, though, you see. That proves to me, I mean, that...
That proves to me is, why not have the Offensive Behaviour and Threatening Communications Act and drop the word football? Because surely, if something's offensive and threatening, and you don't want it...
But if it's happening more at football, you have to target... I mean, why do they not allow alcohol on the trains? Because the behaviour on the trains is bad. They don't allow alcohol on the train after 9 p.m., on any of the trains, mm-hmm. because there's a problem there. So it is perfectly valid to target a geographical area where there is a problem. And I would suggest there is a problem, and the numbers you've quoted have proven, in my perspective, that...
But it's a problem in society as a whole.
It's a problem in society, but it is being highlighted, it's being seen primarily just in football.
Yes, but you keep using that as an example. There's 60,000 people at Celtic Park game.
Yes.
That's the whole of Perth.
Yes.
In one place.
Yes.
At one time.
Yes.
If you stuck the whole of Perth in one place at one time, you would get people behaving badly. How many people can...
But you don't get the equivalent size of crowd at Rugby.
Tea in the Park. Let's pick Tea in the Park.
Yes, that's another scenario.
I couldn't recall the last time somebody was raped or murdered at a football game.
Probably less likely, but yes.
People have been raped and murdered at Tea in the Park.
Yes, and that's taken seriously.
So why is there no offensive behaviour at concert site?
Well, that concert's effectively been banned.
It's concert's fault. It's band's fault. Well, ban all music.
Well, the Tea in the Park was abolished.
No, it wasn't. They just changed because they couldn't go where they were because they were on top of a huge gas mains. And it's been rerouted to happen in Glasgow Green to the Transmit Festival. Yeah. So it's not been abolished, it just couldn't take place where it was. Well, couldn't get an alternative venue to move it to Glasgow Green, so it's still happening.
Well, the name's gone. If Celtic or Rangers were abolished by name, I think that would cause quite a reaction. There does seem to be a problem, and I mean, I thought a lot of this does go back to the fact that the bill was rushed and people were not taken along on board. But I think if we sit down and talk about it rationally, a lot of people would accept there is an issue around football. And that's not just in Scotland, it's not just about sectarianism. We see it in Italy, we see it in Eastern Europe, in a variety of
factors. Yeah, but you see it in... It's because it's big crowds. I mean, under Franco, people used to speak Catalan only at Barcelona games because it was the only place that you could get away if you're in a large crowd. Football crowds behind the Iron Curtain mainly fallen since the collapse of the Iron Curtain, because being in a large crowd was the only place where you could get away with anti-communist stuff, and the police wouldn't be able to pick you up. It's not football's fault, it's a large crowd. It's the dynamics of a large crowd.
Although, it's not every large crowd, because the Olympics and rugby don't tend to have quite the same issues. But yes, there are issues around having large crowds, but I think... We need to talk about it. We need to deal with it.
You touch on football, and all you've been able to say is it's football. It's not football's fault.
I'm not saying football. I agreed with you that football didn't generate this. It didn't start it. It was going long before football came along. But football is the place where it's happening. I mean, if there's a street corner where young people are gathering and drinking, the police will focus on that street corner, and rightly so. Mm-hmm. And if there is hatred and sectarianism,
you don't have the gathering at street corners and having a bevy act.
Well,
you don't need to, because legislation is there to deal with it.
Well, they don't actually have to, I think, bring in legislation or
to avoid people drinking in the street.
Exactly.
Yeah, but legislation is there to deal with it. You do not need the Offensive Behaviour Football Act, which all it's done is actually create ambiguity about what songs can and can't be sung. People's ambiguity about whether political messages are allowed at football or not. I've had a debate with a member of the SNP who thinks this act is great because it prevents political gestures of football.
Well, I mean,
I've
been criticised because I advertise in the Clyde programme and that's seen as political, and you do see party symbols at games and things. So I think what all of that shows is that we should have spent longer consulting, and, you know, for example, the question of should particular songs be banned or whatever, which I wouldn't be terribly keen to go down that route, but we probably didn't discuss it for as long as we could or should have. And so I'm not going to defend this act as being perfect. I think it was a step in the right direction. I would hold to that just now. If it gets repealed, we still need to do something about hatred and sectarianism.
We do, as a society.
Yes.
I mean, I always talk about, so I'm 47. So in my, I know it's hard to read.
A lot younger than me.
In my 40s, in my lifetime, major institutions in Scotland used to not employ people just because they were Catholic. And
yes.
That's gone.
Yes.
Fortunately. In my lifetime, I've had a woman stand in my garden and say to my dad, would you like to sign this petition? What's it for? Well, they're thinking of putting a Catholic school in the area, and as you know, Catholics all live in poorer areas, and they'll be running amok through the gardens. Scotland used to be like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Scotland has been moving away from that. There is still residual parts of that. You can go to events that I've been to. Golf club, you talked about football. I've been to golf club dinners, I've been to cricket club dinners, and I've been to rugby club dinners, where somebody has stood up and told anti-Catholic
yes.
and racist jokes, because Scotland's quite a white country, so the room was white, and they thought, well, there's nobody to be able to offend here.
Yes.
And the other assumption has been, I'm an ex-golf club or cricket club or rugby club, so it'll be fair game for me to tell anti-Catholic jokes because there will not be anti-Catholic. Yeah. That residual element
yes,
is still there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
So my argument would be, it might not be shouted out at a rugby game, and it might not be shouted out.
But it's under the surface.
But it's under the
yes,
surface.
No, I mean, I
because it's
that,
a societal
yes.
problem.
Yes.
So instead, so don't have a piece of legislation and say, do you know what, see this dirty down market sectarian problem we've got, it's all football's fault.
No, I mean, I don't think I hope I'm not saying that it's all football's fault.
No, but that's the, when you have a piece of legislation like that, that's, as a football fan who has gone in football for 40 plus years and doesn't engage in sectarian behaviour, it feels like the politicians have said, let's just say it's dirty down market football's fault.
Well, I mean, if this does get repealed, we're going to have wider hatred legislation, and that will kind of, if you like, bury the fact that about football within a wider context. And if that makes people happy, perhaps we can do that. But I still think whenever you deal with hatred, you're going to ask the question, where do we see hatred? Now, that doesn't mean there's hidden hatred under the surface, but where do we see hatred? And if it makes you happier, let's bring marches in as well. We see hatred at some of these marches and some of these football games. Just as we see alcohol problems after 9 p.m. on the train. So they've been dealt with. So sometimes we do need to target where the problem's happening. But if people are going to be happier with, you know, a kind of wider legislation, we call the act a different name, so be it, yeah.
I mean, certainly from some of the people I've seen, getting back to when I was growing up, anti-Irish Catholic sectarianism prejudice that existed in Scotland, the perception is that this act has been a wee sly way to have another dig back at that Irish Catholic culture that Scotland's never been that comfortable with, because it sucked in songs about the troubles of Northern Ireland.
Well, you see, I would see the Act as being, it's not specific, not openly, but I mean effectively, for the protection of the minorities who have been badly treated, which includes Irish and Catholics. So the fact that when you look at the religious figures, albeit they are smaller, the main victims are clearly Catholic, and therefore I would argue the main beneficiaries from a religious perspective of the Act have been Catholics. But I mean, I do accept the numbers are small, and I do accept that there's wider issues out there.
And if you ignore the things of behaviour of football fan, your comment yesterday holds true for general religious hatred crimes in Scotland. Are principally the biggest sector that's affected is Catholic, followed by Muslim, followed by Hindu and Sikh and Jew.
Well,
and
the Jews would feel they were higher up.
Well, I think there's much more muchness in there than there. Yes. I think.
But I mean, I'm absolutely clear that, you know, Catholics and the Irish community have been the ones that have been discriminated against, as have Jews, blacks, you know, and a number of other minority groups. So, and the Act was intended to be to help and protect some of these groups, and it would be fair to say, I think, that the Jewish community and people like Stonewall, who also represent minority groups, are concerned about the repeal of the Act because of the signal it may send out. Because I still see and hear anti-Jewish comments flowing around, despite the fact that the Jewish population of Glasgow is now tiny. Mm-hmm. But the Jews are saying, you know, that they are feeling worse now than they have ever felt in Scotland as a minority.
I could bore you with the anti-Jewish discrimination across Europe and what causes it and brings it up and down. It's nothing to do with this Act, but I'll leave that for another day.
But I mean, I think what the point I was trying to make, and the point that they would make, is that at least this has made a statement that, you know, there's a kind of line to draw.
But wouldn't it be better? And I think you've, without openly saying it, I think you've conceded getting down the route of some of the songs that appear to have been. I don't want those songs in football. I don't think people should be criminalised for singing some of the songs that are sung. I think the songs that we would all want rid of were illegal before the Act.
Well, I don't know any songs are illegal as such, but
singing about being up to ease and being in blood.
Mm-hmm. Well, is that a breach of the peace then, is it?
So you're singing about a religious group being up to ease and their blood. Mm-hmm. That's religious hatred. That would have been illegal prior to the Act, and illegal.
Well, I'm not sure if it is or it isn't. I think we probably do need to clarify that, but I remember Rosanna Cunningham arguing, and I think correctly so, that, you know, it does depend a bit on the context, and you know, if it depends on the motivation, depends where it is, depends who's listening to it, and these kind of things.
So, a wider, what you're saying would be what I'm hearing may not be intentional, a wider hate crime act would be better.
I think given where we are now, I mean, who knows what's going to happen. I don't even know when this is going out, but on a Thursday this week, when we are debating stage one of the repeal bill. But I mean, the numbers in Parliament do stack up if everybody turns up. Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to be
repealed. Well, the numbers are quite tight. So we will see what happens. But I mean, I've never said the bill couldn't, or the Act couldn't be improved. I would like to see it improved. But if we think we are where we are and it's going to be repealed, we are going to have to do something, and it's not just about a few more teachers in schools.
So don't pick on football. See, my whole issue with this is, I grew up in my core period of, I started going to football in the 70s, but my core period of going to football in the 80s was when you're a football fan, so you're worse than the shit in the bottom of my shoe. Because I was a football fan, because there was trouble at football. There's nothing angers me more than football is the source of all our problems. I remember the first away game I went to without my dad, with my brother, was on a football special to Dundee. I wouldn't stick my dog on that football special. It was a train that was out of commission. but stuck on just because we are football fans and we deserve to be treated like this.
You don't even get a special train anymore.
We arrived in Dundee and it was a dark, pouring down with rain day. We were frog-marched through the town in a police escort in the same manner that you see in a prisoner of war film. A couple of guys tried to leave this prisoner of war march through the town. And were immediately, because they wanted to go to the pub first, and immediately stuck in the back of the police van for having the temerity to actually want to behave like they would do every other day of the week, apart from that 2-3 hour window when they put on a football scarf and suddenly are dirty down market people who are the source of all the problems of society. Don't return to those days. Because all that did was, that was a vicious downward spiral of you treat people like crap, and people, lo and behold, as every psychologist knows, you treat people like animals, they behave like animals. And it was a vicious downward spiral until disaster happened. Suddenly we then started treating people like grown-ups and like they do when they go to the cinema or everything else, and people started behaving better.
Well, when you're in a cycle like that, and chickens and eggs and all these kind of comparisons, it is difficult to tell what is causing what. And I do accept that if you treat people badly, you can expect a bad result. But I think they also go, the other opposite side also goes, that if people act badly, you can expect a bad result.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember being, as a teenager, at a Clyde Falkirk game, I think it was, at Shawfield, and bottles, you know, flying backwards and forwards. And, it, you know, it was a horrible atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Now, that wasn't caused by the fans being treated badly. That was caused by the fans behaving badly. So, I mean, neither side is innocent in this. And, I mean, we've made some progress. I mean, alcohol at football was banned. I think that was a good thing. I think it would be very risky to bring it back. And that's not to say, well, of course, you can go out and drink somewhere else. Well, yes. But alcohol fueling... And
I'm teetotal.
Okay, well, good for that.
But that's another debate for me about...
Yes.
You're allowed to drink football. You're allowed to drink in football.
Yes.
If you spend more money on going to the game.
Well, that's another issue. It kind of goes against your bit about football fans in the past were seen as the dregs of society. Now it's very much can be quite elitist in certain circles.
No, so what we mean is it's still the non-premium-priced football fan who's treated differently.
Yes, well,
I don't think that's a good...
Well, it's not good for saying that nobody at football should get alcohol, but... I mean, ideally, yes, I would like to go to a game and have a pint, but, you know, I wouldn't even suggest it at a Clyde game, let alone a Rangers or Celtic game.
No, but... I'll not go into this. There's various ways you can do it that wouldn't be a problem, and it gets back to Scotland as a whole has a drinking problem. It's not football that's got the drinking problem.
No, but...
Which thing is, if Scotland's got a sectarian problem,
yes.
Scotland has a sectarian problem, Scottish football doesn't have a sectarian problem per se. It's society that's got the problem. Just
well, and football is a part of society, and frankly is a very big part of society.
It's where it might be exhibited at, it,
yes.
at its most... But it's society's problem, not football's problem.
So it's both. No, it's both. You can't say it's not football's problem. You can say it's not only football's problem, but it's society's problem, and football is a very big part of our society.
Yes, but don't then say, so we're only going to tackle it when it happens
no,
in football.
No, and I agree with that. I mean, I do agree with that point. We're not saying we're only tackle it at football. And yes, you can look at the Act and say, well, it does have football in the title.
That's
threatening communications part has absolutely nothing to do with football, and it does say "and," but the whole thing looks like getting repealed. But you know, it's not either or; it's both. And it's society's problem, and it's football's problem.
Do you know, as an apolitical person, do you know what I would love? Because we talked about the arithmetic, there's two votes. I would love the SNP people to be as honest as you've been on here and say, hands up, this isn't right. The rest of the parliament here, and I know sometimes in the nature of politics it's not the dumb thing, but as somebody who's not a member of any political party and never has been, I would absolutely love it if parts of the SNP, even if the leadership couldn't turn around and said, you've got a point.
I'm due to be the last speaker. There's due to 7 speakers on Thursday. I'm due to the last one. There's a risk that I get dropped off. But if I speak, I will certainly be saying that this Act is not perfect. I will be saying that we need to look at marches. I'll be saying we need to look at wider hate crime. These are the kind of things I'll be saying. But I will still be voting to keep this Act because I believe it has been a good step forward and should not be repealed.
You can't say, do you know what, you're right.
I've not said throughout this, unless I'm very mistaken, I've not said that you are right on the whole thing.
No, what you've said
on individual points, right. You are right.
So you can't stand up and say the argument that this is a not great piece of legislation has merit, but stuff it because I'm going to keep hating it.
Every piece of legislation we pass is short of perfect. Now this piece, we would have rated 80%, 75%, something like that. You know, so it's not as good as some, which is at 90%. It's not as bad as others, which is at 50%. I'm happy to accept it's not a perfect piece of legislation. I'm happy to accept it was rushed. But I think it was good having it. I think there are some major good aspects to it. And I think if we can't keep it, we're going to have something in its place.
Okay. With that, I'll say thanks very much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast, and obviously we've now given a right of reply in some extent to the SNP for their position of the Act, and John seemed to be, when I met him, an affable, amiable person and not like the character that I had read online. I suppose we could all be a bit like that sometimes. However, I did find his position a bit peculiar. You'll probably hear by the way that my pitch of my voice rose dramatically that it was all football's fault, and despite him using the word society a number of times, and he admitted lots of things that were wrong with the Act. So the thing that really just puzzled me was he admitted that the Act was rushed law, was vague law, had issues with it, poorly enforced by the police, probably its way it covers songs was incorrect, that there was hate crime in the rest of society, and legislation, if you're going to have hate crime legislation that impacts on the challenges in Scotland, you cannot bypass legislation around Orange Walks. So he agreed all that and then said, so based on all that, I'll stick with voting for the Act, which is probably the challenge of party politics when parties have a good strong whip on their hands. Anyway, that's where we are with the Act, set all out in there. More things coming along soon. There's the firewalk for the Celtic FC Foundation coming up, if you're interested in that. Anyway, I will say enough of me. We start off with the Bravery song, An Honest Mistake, and finish up with what will hopefully happen on Thursday, Honest Juice and Rip It Up. That's me, Harry Brady. That was him, John Mason. This is me saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. That there are things in life that one can't quite express. You know me, I'm acting dumb, dumb. You know the scene is very humdrum. And my favorite songs and titles, rip it up and start again.